The drawing of the three takes us deeper into the mind of Stephen King at his most ambitious. This second installment in the Dark Tower series has become a cultural touchstone for devoted King readers, with celebrities like Norman Reedus citing it as their favorite in the series. What makes this book particularly fascinating is how it represents King's pivot from pure horror into a genre-bending masterpiece that defies categorization. Unlike his more famous works like The Shining or It, this novel reveals King's versatility as a storyteller, weaving elements of fantasy, western, and psychological thriller into a tapestry that continues to captivate readers decades after its publication. The book's exploration of addiction, redemption, and identity has made it particularly resonant with readers who might otherwise avoid fantasy literature, drawing them into King's sprawling multiverse through its deeply human characters. Roland Deschain awakens on a desolate beach beside the Western Sea, his quest for the mysterious Dark Tower barely begun. The opening scene is brutal and unforgiving. Roland's guns and ammunition are wet, and strange lobster-like creatures, which he'll come to call lobstrosities, emerge from the water with their eerie questioning sounds, "Did a chick? Dumb a chum?" Before he can react, one of these creatures severs two fingers from his right hand and a toe from his right foot. This injury is catastrophic for Roland, not merely physically but symbolically. As a gunslinger, his identity is tied to his ability to draw and fire his ancient revolvers with lightning speed. With his dominant hand maimed, Roland faces a crisis of identity alongside his physical crisis. The infection spreading from his wounds creates a ticking clock that drives the entire narrative: find help or die. Roland's situation grows increasingly desperate as he staggers northward along the endless beach. Fever-ridden and weakened, he's forced to confront his mortality in a way we hadn't seen in the previous book. The gunslinger who seemed nearly invincible, who sacrificed a young boy named Jake to pursue his quarry, is now reduced to a limping, delirious figure on the verge of death. When Roland discovers a door standing impossibly on the beach, a door can nowhere, anchored to nothing, we get our first glimpse of how King will expand his universe. The door bears the high speech inscription, "The Prisoner," and when Roland opens it, he finds himself looking through someone else's eyes into a world both familiar and strange to him, our world, specifically a passenger airplane in the 1980s. Through this door, Roland will draw the first of three companions prophesied by the Man in Black at the conclusion of the previous book. Eddie Dean is a heroin addict and drug smuggler, a young man whose potential has been consumed by his addiction and his codependent relationship with his brother Henry. When Roland enters Eddie's mind on an airplane returning to New York from Nassau, he finds a man at the end of his rope, desperately trying to smuggle cocaine through customs while suffering the early stages of withdrawal. What makes Eddie compelling isn't just his predicament, but his complexity. Despite his addiction, there's an undeniable core of strength within him, what Roland calls steel, that reminds the gunslinger of his long-dead friend Cuthbert. Eddie possesses a quick wit, a fierce loyalty, and a capacity for love that has been twisted and corrupted by his relationship with his brother and his addiction. The dynamic between Roland and Eddie is immediately fraught with tension. Roland needs Eddie's body to acquire food and medicine, while Eddie needs Roland's help to survive the dangerous situation he's in with both customs officials and the drug lord Balazar. Their relationship begins as one of mutual exploitation, but evolves into something more complex as they navigate the dangers of Eddie's world together. The gunfight at Balazar's nightclub, The Leaning Tower, represents a turning point for Eddie. When he discovers his brother Henry has been killed, Eddie embraces violence with a cold determination that mirrors Roland's own nature. "I want to go to war," he tells Roland, and in that moment, he begins his transformation from addict to gunslinger. When Roland forces Eddie to choose between returning to his world of addiction or following him on his quest, Eddie reluctantly chooses the latter. His withdrawal on the beach is depicted with brutal honesty, the physical pain, the psychological torment, the desperate bargaining. Yet through this crucible, Eddie begins to find himself, to discover who he might be without the twin crutches of heroin and his brother's toxic influence. The second door on the beach bears the inscription, "The Lady of Shadows," and through it, Roland encounters one of King's most complex characters, a woman with two distinct personalities sharing one body. Odetta Holmes is a wealthy, educated civil rights activist who lost her legs when pushed in front of a subway train. Detta Walker is her alter ego, violent, vengeful, and filled with hatred, particularly for white men whom she calls honky maffas. King uses this character to explore themes of racial identity, trauma, and the fragmentation of self. Odetta has no awareness of Detta's existence, while Detta has some vague understanding that there are blanks in her life. The contrast between them is stark. Odetta's compassion and dignity against Detta's cunning viciousness, yet they represent two responses to the same traumatic experiences. The revelation that Odetta slash Detta's condition stems from childhood trauma, being struck by a brick dropped by a man named Jack Mort, adds another layer to her character. Her fractured psyche becomes a metaphor for the divided America of the civil rights era, the tension between dignified resistance and righteous rage. Eddie's relationship with Odetta develops quickly into love, while his interactions with Detta are marked by terror and revulsion. Yet King makes it clear that both women are incomplete halves of a whole person. Roland understands that what they need isn't the victory of one personality over the other, but integration. Odetta's compassion tempered by Detta's fierce survival instinct. The scenes where Detta traps Eddie on the beach, positioning him to be devoured by the lobstrosities as the tide rises, showcase King's ability to create sustained tension. Eddie's helplessness and Detta's gleeful cruelty create a seemingly hopeless situation that will require Roland's intervention through the third door to resolve. The third door bears the inscription, "The Pusher," rather than "Death," as Roland had expected from the Man in Black's prophecy. Through this door, Roland enters the mind of Jack Mort, a sociopath who derives pleasure from hurting others, specifically by dropping objects on them or pushing them into danger. The revelation that Jack Mort was responsible for two pivotal traumas in Odetta slash Detta's life, dropping the brick that struck her as a child and later pushing her in front of the subway train that took her legs, creates a stunning connection that ties the characters together in ways they couldn't have imagined. Even more shocking is Roland's discovery that Mort was about to push a young boy into traffic, the same Jake Chambers whom Roland had met at the way station and later sacrificed in his pursuit of the Man in Black. These connections suggest a cosmic design behind Roland's quest, a pattern that transcends individual worlds. The Man in Black's prophecy begins to make sense. Roland is drawing companions to him across dimensions, people whose lives are already intertwined through trauma and fate. Unlike with Eddie and Odetta slash Detta, Roland makes no attempt to communicate with Jack Mort or treat him with any humanity. Mort is simply a tool to be used, first to acquire ammunition and antibiotics in New York, and then as the catalyst for healing Odetta's fractured psyche. Roland's plan comes together in a moment of inspired improvisation. By forcing Mort onto the subway tracks in front of the same train that took Odetta's legs years earlier, he creates a paradox where Odetta and Detta can finally see each other as separate entities. This confrontation between the two personalities leads not to mutual destruction, but to integration. The birth of a third woman who calls herself Susanna Dean, taking Eddie's last name in acknowledgement of their bond. The climactic scene on the beach marks a pivotal transformation in the story's dynamics. Susanna, having finally integrated her fractured personalities, demonstrates her newfound wholeness by wielding Roland's ancient sandalwood-gripped revolvers with uncanny precision, a skill that proves she's truly become a gunslinger. The sight of her driving back the savage lobstrosities while balanced on her wheelchair becomes a powerful symbol of how far she's come from her initial appearance as the conflicted Detta Odetta. This moment crystallizes the completion of Roland's drawing of the three, transforming them from desperate individuals into a true quartet, a group bound by fate and destiny in ways that transcend mere circumstance. Roland's recovery from his devastating infection serves as both literal and metaphorical rebirth. The fever that nearly claimed his life burns away some of his cold isolation, leaving him changed, still determined, but newly aware of his connections to others. As they finally leave the endless western sea behind, moving inland toward the looming forests and ancient hills, each member of the quartet has undergone profound changes. Eddie has broken free from heroine's grip, Susanna has unified her warring selves, and Roland has learned to trust, albeit guardedly. The evolution of their relationships reveals itself in subtle ways. Eddie's sardonic humor now occasionally draws reluctant smiles from Roland. Susanna's strength and wisdom become the group's emotional anchor. Yet beneath these growing bonds lies Roland's terrible knowledge, that he would sacrifice them all for the tower if forced to choose. This understanding haunts their quieter moments, an unspoken shadow across their campfires. Roland's dreams become increasingly vivid and symbolic. The dark tower appears to him standing stark against crimson fields, its black stone surface reflecting a blood-red sky. Within its spiral staircase, he sees the ghosts of everyone he's ever known, Susan Delgado, Cuthbert, Elaine, and now newer faces that he fears may join them, Eddie, Susanna. These visions underscore the weight of his obsession and its potential cost. The parallel Eddie draws between Roland's tower fixation and drug addiction proves particularly insightful. When he warns Roland, "If you kill what you love, you're damned," he speaks from personal experience with obsession's destructive power. Roland's response, "I am damned already, but perhaps even the damned may be saved," reveals both his fatalism and a flicker of hope. This exchange distills the moral complexity at the heart of Roland's character and quest. The question of whether pursuing the tower represents redemption or damnation becomes increasingly central. Roland's willingness to sacrifice everything and everyone for his quest could be seen as either noble dedication or monstrous selfishness. The story suggests that perhaps true redemption lies not in reaching the tower itself, but in how one approaches the journey, in the capacity to value and preserve connections along the way rather than sacrificing them all on the altar of a single-minded goal. The doors on the beach serve as more than mere plot devices. They represent King's expanding conception of his multiverse. Each door connects worlds that seem fundamentally different, yet are bound by patterns that repeat across dimensions. The connections between characters, Jack Mort's attacks on Odetta, his planned attack on Jake, and the subtle echoes between New York across different decades, suggest that these worlds aren't truly separate, but different facets of a greater reality. Like the spokes of a cosmic wheel, each door opens onto a path that ultimately leads to the Dark Tower itself. The doors function as metaphors for perspective and empathy, serving as portals not just between worlds, but between minds. When Roland enters another's consciousness, he literally sees through their eyes, experiences their thoughts and memories, tastes their fears and desires. This forced intimacy creates understanding even when Roland might prefer emotional distance. His experience in Eddie's mind shows him the complexity behind addiction, the guilt over Henry, the self-loathing, the desperate need to feel whole. His time in Odetta/Detta's mind reveals the trauma that created her fractured psyche, from the brick that struck her as a child to the wheels of the subway that took her legs. King uses these doors to explore profound questions of identity and consciousness. When Roland takes control of another's body, where does the original consciousness go? Does it sleep, observe, or simply cease to exist temporarily? What responsibility does he bear for actions taken in a borrowed form? the ethical implications become particularly pointed with Jack Mort, whom Roland uses and ultimately sacrifices without remorse. This raises questions about justice, revenge, and the moral cost of pursuing the greater good. The Doors represent possibility and transformation on multiple levels. Each person Roland draws through a door is fundamentally changed by the crossing, not just physically transported, but spiritually transformed. Eddie is forced into withdrawal and begins to discover his potential strength, moving from addiction's prisoner to a gunslinger in training. Odetta and Detta confront each other and merge into Susanna, healing a psychological schism through supernatural means. Even Roland himself is transformed by these encounters, his isolation broken by new companions who challenge and support him. His rigid worldview begins to crack, allowing for new possibilities and deeper connections. These doorways also serve as King's commentary on the nature of storytelling itself. Like the doors on the beach, stories are portals into other lives and experiences. They force us to see through others' eyes, to confront uncomfortable truths, and to emerge changed by the journey. The doors remind us that boundaries between worlds, whether physical, psychological, or narrative, are more permeable than we imagine. Roland begins this volume as a man defined by his quest and his abilities. The loss of his fingers represents a profound challenge to his identity. If he cannot shoot with his customary speed and accuracy, who is he? His illness forces him into dependence on others, a position deeply uncomfortable for the self-reliant gunslinger. Throughout the narrative, we see Roland adapt to his limitations with characteristic determination. He learns to shoot with his left hand. He develops strategies that rely on his companion's strengths rather than just his own. Most significantly, he begins to form emotional connections that were absent in the first book. Roland's relationship with Eddie evolves from manipulation to grudging respect to something approaching friendship. His understanding of Odetta/Detta/Susanna demonstrates an emotional intelligence that wasn't evident in his earlier interactions with Jake. Though Roland remains capable of ruthless calculation, as seen in his handling of Jack Mort, he's no longer the emotionally isolated figure from the gunslinger. Yet King makes it clear that Roland's core hasn't changed. The tower remains his obsession, the fixed point around which everything else revolves. When Eddie confronts him about his willingness to sacrifice those he loves, Roland doesn't deny it. His damnation, as he sees it, is already complete. His hands are stained with the blood of his hometown of Gilead, with Jake's sacrifice, with countless others who have fallen along his path. The question that lingers at the end of the book is whether Roland's new companions will change him enough to alter his fate, or whether they too will become sacrifices on the altar of his obsession. The drawing of the three significantly expands the scope of King's Dark Tower universe, transforming it from a singular post-apocalyptic setting into a complex multiverse. While The Gunslinger took place entirely in Roland's world, a post-apocalyptic landscape that combined elements of the Old West with medieval feudalism, this second volume introduces our world as one of many connected dimensions, each with its own temporal flow and evolutionary path. King masterfully uses the contrast between worlds to highlight aspects of both realities. Roland's bewilderment at modern conveniences provides both comic relief and social commentary. His encounters with automatic doors leave him suspicious of invisible servants. His amazement at aspirin seems almost childlike, and his first taste of a Pepsi becomes an amusing cultural clash. These moments of fish-out-of-water confusion serve multiple purposes. They provide necessary moments of levity in an otherwise dark narrative while simultaneously forcing readers to examine their own world through fresh eyes. The Gunslinger's practical assessment of our world reveals uncomfortable truths about modern society. His shock at seeing paper carelessly discarded, paper being precious in his world, and his careful counting of bullets contrasts sharply with our disposable culture. His reaction to modern medicine, television, and even basic plumbing illuminates both the miracle and madness of contemporary civilization. Through Roland's eyes, readers see both the advantages and the spiritual poverty of their own society. The concept that the world has moved on becomes increasingly complex as the story progresses. Roland's world has regressed technologically while maintaining vestiges of an ancient formal culture, a world of honor codes, rigid hierarchies, and forgotten technologies. Meanwhile, our world has advanced technologically while losing something essential, the moral clarity, sense of purpose, and understanding of duty that defines Roland's gunslinger code. This juxtaposition raises questions about the true nature of progress and decline. King weaves these parallel worlds together through the central image of the Dark Tower, suggesting that all realities are connected through this mysterious structure. The tower's weakening manifests differently across dimensions, in Roland's world through obvious decay and mutation, in our world through more subtle corruption and moral degradation. This cosmic framework elevates the narrative beyond a simple quest story into an exploration of interconnected realities. Roland's journey becomes more than a personal mission. It transforms into a desperate attempt to preserve the very fabric of existence across all possible worlds. The introduction of doors between worlds also serves as a brilliant metaphor for the power of fiction itself. The ability to step through portals into other realities, to see through other eyes, and to question what we consider normal. Through these dimensional doorways, King explores not just different physical realities, but different ways of seeing and understanding the universe itself. Addiction serves as a powerful theme throughout the novel, manifesting in multiple forms that reflect its insidious nature. Eddie's heroin dependency is portrayed with unflinching honesty, from the bone-deep aches and cold sweats of withdrawal to the endless mental calculations of an addict's next fix. King, drawing from his own battles with cocaine and alcohol, captures the minutiae of addiction with haunting precision. The ritualistic preparation of the drug, the momentary bliss followed by crushing shame, and the elaborate lies addicts tell themselves and others. Roland's obsession with the tower represents a more complex form of addiction. When Eddie draws parallels between Roland's single-minded pursuit and his brother Henry's drug dependency, the similarities become stark and unsettling. Both share the same ruthless prioritization of their obsession above all else. Relationships crumble, moral boundaries blur, and personal costs become irrelevant. Roland's willingness to sacrifice Jake in the first book mirrors the way Eddie's addiction led him to betray family and friends. The key distinction lies in Roland's greater purpose. While drug addiction serves only to perpetuate itself, Roland's quest carries the weight of saving multiple worlds, though this rationalization might itself be another form of addict's logic. Redemption emerges as a powerful counterforce to addiction throughout the narrative. Eddie's withdrawal on the beach becomes a brutal baptism, his body purging itself while Roland stands guard, marking the beginning of his transformation from junkie to gunslinger. The integration of Odetta and Detta into Susanna represents another form of redemption, showing how acknowledging and embracing one's darker aspects can lead to wholeness rather than fragmentation. Even Roland, who carries the weight of countless sins and considers himself beyond salvation, sees the tower as a possible path to redemption, though whether it will offer absolution or further damnation remains uncertain. King weaves a compelling argument that redemption flourishes through human connection. Eddie's healing truly begins not with physical withdrawal, but through his growing bond with Roland and his budding romance with Odetta. Susanna's emergence comes through the recognition that both Odetta and Detta are essential parts of her identity, neither to be rejected. Roland, despite his initial solitary nature, finds his humanity rekindling through the formation of his quartet, a family forged through shared trials rather than blood. The novel concludes with these themes in dynamic tension: addiction's pull versus redemption's promise, obsessive isolation versus healing connection, the possibility of damnation against the hope of salvation. As the Ka-Tet leaves the beach behind, moving inland toward new challenges, these opposing forces continue their dance, suggesting that redemption isn't a single moment of transformation, but an ongoing journey. The path to the tower becomes not just a physical quest, but a spiritual one, where each step could lead toward either salvation or deeper obsession.